The last time it was just fine. This is Rosella Lee, and I think maybe we start back with when you came to Northville.
You're going to ask me questions.
I'll just ask a couple questions, and then you just, as you think of things.
And then when I stop talking, you turn it off.
Sure,
okay.
If you'd like.
So that'll be fun.
Yeah, well, that's...
Yeah, that's half of it.
Right.
All right,
you
ready?
Sure. When you came to Northville in what year?
In 1930, in the fall of that year.
30.
And
you were married, lady?
I had just been married in June of that year. And we lived among relatives most of that time because we knew we were coming here in September. We came and we drove over here from Pontiac, which was my husband's home, and came in from the... off 8 Mile, which is off 8 Mile now, and that beautiful boulevard type coming in, and we just fell in love with that first entrance to Northville, and even now it's more beautiful than it was then because of our flowers and shrubbery and things. And
okay.
And we parked by the old high school, and my husband went in to find out about his job and where we could find a place to live and things of that type. And so we spent the rest of the afternoon after he left the superintendent's office to look for housing. There were only three places of furnished places in town at the time. And we chose the one we wanted, which was just about 2 blocks from the school. We had the whole upstairs of the house. And now, today, it is one of our redone houses in the historical part of the community, and they did such a beautiful job in redoing it. And now they have made the house into 4 apartments, up and down, 2 each.
What street was
that on?
That's
on the corner of Wayne Street and Dunlap. And it's a pretty house right across from the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we had... that was close to town, close to school, everything was right there for us, so it was lovely. Because we didn't even have a car then, we had to work forward to that. But while looking for houses, we went into one that was down on Randolph. And that was owned by a dear old lady who was the organist of the Methodist Church here. And she took us through the house, showed us the apartment and everything, and she really wanted us to take it, but we sort of liked the other one better. But our connection with her grew from then on, even though we didn't rent her house. We arrived in town on a Wednesday with our furnishings, what few they were, and on Thursday night, she had us at choir practice at the Methodist Church. And that's how we got started in our church life in Northville.
Sure.
The very day after we arrived. And she became a very dear friend of ours.
Her name was
Arabella Tinham.
Oh.
And she, I don't know how old she was, but she must have been in her late 70s when we first knew her. And she had played the organ in the Methodist Church for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got off to a good start.
Yeah.
And through that, we got acquainted with a lot of people, both in school and in church.
What did your husband teach, or what was his?
He was hired to start a music program here. They had a little trouble in their school, and they were having a new superintendent the year we came. And the man they had hired was Thad Knapp, who came from Highland Park. He'd been in Highland Park for many years. And we were both interviewed, my husband and I, as teachers for the Northville system, in his home while he still lived in Highland Park. And he owned the family home here in Northville, and he wanted to come back to this area to fill out his retiring life and so on. But they talked him into becoming the superintendent here because he had so much experience, and the school needed a very strong leader at that time. And he was the one that hired my husband, who had only 1 year teaching experienced on Hamtramck, and he wanted him to come here, which was not as good a setup as my husband had down there, but the future looked brighter, and so we came and settled here. I did not get a job, even though I was interviewed for one, because there just was no spot for me. But he told us, at that time when we were interviewed, we weren't married. That was early in the spring, and we were married in June. But he interviewed us for the future, and he says, if we can't place you, I will see that you get enough extra work of some kind that it'll pay you to get married before you come to Northville. That was his. He didn't like to hire a man who was not married. We found that out later. But that was what he was pushing for. And he held true to that, because he found that the English teacher was overworked, but they didn't have money enough for an extra teacher. So he hired me to help her correct her papers. So I, for 50 cents an hour, corrected themes of the high school English teacher. And we worked together all that year, that first year we were here. Then he also placed me in the library because they needed extra help in the school library. So he, all at 50 cents an hour. I was an hourly person. And it was fun. It gave me something to do and gave us extra money. These were hard times, if you think back in 1930. These were the bad years. For the Depression didn't hit our banks in Northville until almost 1931, but where the banks closed. It was late 30s, I think it was, and we came here in the fall of 30s. So we weren't here very long before the banks closed, and what little money we had earned up to that point was all in that Northville bank. And we were, of course, everybody was caught the same way. But we had two banks in Northville at that time, and the other one was still going. And people in town who had money in that bank had a little easier time of it than the rest of us. And another thing that was not in our favor, in those years, teachers were paid on a 10-month basis. Now they're paid 12 months a year. It's prorated over the whole year. And so we had no money coming in at the end of the summer of that first year of teaching here, so that we didn't have anything to bank on at all. And so it was a very tough year. That's the year that we had a man living next door to us who didn't like gardening, and he had a little garden spot in his backyard, and we pleaded with him to have that garden spot. And that's the summer I learned to eat beet greens, and I love them ever since. But everybody did something to help themselves in...
How did the school... they had the money to pay the teachers, but those 2 months.
But those 2 months in the year, see, and so from June until September, there was no money coming in.
Sure.
Unless you earned it in another way. And, of course, that was our first year here. We hadn't had too many contacts by that time. But we made it. We had to borrow a little money, and were able to do that and got through. But it was tough times for everybody, very tough times.
Was the bank closed for a very long period of time?
Yes, and eventually we got our money back. But it was in such little dribbles.
What was the name of that bank?
That was the one where the Oren Jewelry Store is now. It's on corner. And it was called, I think it was called the Lapham Bank. Mr. Lapham was the head of it at that time. And he was very wonderful, very sympathetic with especially the young folks who had nothing to bank on. And yet he couldn't do a thing. He couldn't release any money at all until the government said they could. And we got it back. Of course, we didn't have much in to begin with because we were just starting out. And we had lots of college debts, so we had to finagle in many ways to take care of everything. And then that was the year I also was expecting my first baby, and that put a sort of another damper in it for a while financially because of the extra expense that would come with that. But you struggled through it. You got over it very gradually. during these hard times, I can't tell you the year it was. We'd have to find that out from the school some way. But the teachers received, I can't remember whether it was Depression Days or War Days. Because right after the Depression, you had your Second World War, you see, and that came in. So they were all bad times, but financially. But that's, the teachers for a whole year were paid script money, like Monopoly money, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was a good investment if you could buy something from some store and the manager could hold it until it was redeemed. And they, if they could, they would. But we only had one store in Northville that wasn't a chain. See, chain stores couldn't do it.
Right.
But the EMB, it was called, it was Mr. Bogart's Grocery Store, that is where Gennetti's is today. And that meat market and grocery store combined, he was, Mr. Bogart was financially able to hold the script so we could eat. If it hadn't been for him, I don't know how we'd gotten through. Right. Because we could use our script money, he held it, we got the food.
When you know, was it at the end of the year then that the script
was? It was just about a year that they held it, just about a year. The only other store that we found around here that would take our script was Mr. Willoughby in the shoe store in Plymouth. And so we could have shoes on our feet and food, but that was about it. Huh.
Was this something just particular to Northville School, or were other schools doing this?
I don't really know, but I imagine it was in many places. Yeah. We were so concerned with just our place, and we had no idea how long it would be held. We didn't know how long this was going on. But it was, as we look back, it was good for us. It was very good for us. We learned to save early in our married life, and that was very beneficial later in educating our children and all the other things that needed to be done. Mm-hmm. So that part was good. But in about a year, I don't know exactly there how long, but it was a complete school year at least, that we got that type of money and lived through it. Later on, I did get a full-time job in the Northville system. But in the meantime, I did a lot of substituting work. And that was interesting because they called me, even though my training was for high school students, I subbed from kindergarten through the 12th grade. And many times I got in situations where I knew very little about it. And that's what happened when I went out to the, when I was called to substitute out at the Little Hinman School. This school was an old one-room schoolhouse on the corner of Meadowbrook and 7 Mile. And they called me to fill out a couple weeks because their teacher was very ill. And I went out there and as a substitute then. And the first day I went in this little school, I just was overwhelmed. I had 17 pupils from grades 1 through 8. And they were representing each class. The only grade I skipped was the third grade. So I had to teach all the grades, every subject. And I had never been in a one-room school before in my life. Didn't know what it was about at all. But I struggled through, and that word struggle is very necessary there. I struggled through those first 2 weeks. And then the president of the board called me to her home one night, and she pleaded with me to take the job because the other girl had resigned. I don't know if it was her illness or that she just didn't want to come back and face those children, but and I don't know why I signed the contract for $5 a day of teaching.
Oh my.
But And because I was so overwhelmed with it up to that point. But I said yes, and I like a challenge, and this was certainly a challenge for me. And I stayed there 4 years. So this Hinman School became mine to manage and control for that period of time. But I gained so much for myself, and I hope that children gained likewise. But we had some wonderful experiences together.
Did you have to tend fires or do the extra things?
I would ask in this question, how does one man and measure the jobs that we're doing? Many winter mornings I got there and had to shovel snow away from the front door before I could even open the door. And that was long before the children had arrived. But and if you stoked the big pot-bellied stove inside, which I had to build the fire in it every day, if you stoked it well enough at night, you might find a few sparks there in the morning. And those were glad mornings when you didn't have to start another fire. And of course the children had chores to do, and we had a chart where we listed the chores and their names, and they changed the job every week. And those included carrying coal from the shed and water from the well, or brooms and mops from the closet. The floors of that school were always cold. A board member told me that there were three floors. They just put a new one on top of the old one, hoping that would help, because it was right on the ground and it was so cold. But they were always cold, and we kept our boots on most of the time during the winter. And we found that even working math problems with gloved hands was possible. Since 1940 to 44, and those were the years I was in this school, were the war years, we received all kinds of food surpluses. So the teacher and one well-trained eighth grader from her mother's kitchen experimented with stews and soups, which simmered marvelously on the big stove while the aroma beckoned our thoughts away from the printed page. Another memory is our recesses. Remember, these children are mixed ages, but they're all on the same recess ground, and sometimes that became dangerous. The variance of ages allows the little ones to come into too close contact with the more mature games. And that resulted one day in an injury of a fourth grader. We had no car, no phone, no principal or supervisor. What does the teacher do? She stands out on Seven Mile Road and flags down the car. The student was bandaged by the doctor and sent home to rest. But that memory of that incident is still very vivid in my mind. One day while we were working quietly, except for the ones reciting up front on this long bench that was there in the front for the class that was supposed to be there, a huge wheel from a truck released itself and was rolling swiftly across the road to our little school. There was no escape, as we watched ever so closely, but it veered a bit to the left as it smashed through our picket fence, thus shattering only the small corner of the building. But that was a tense moment for all of us. Another highlight of a one-room school would be the Christmas program, to which all the parents were glad to come.
You had to plan that all out?
That had to be planned, had to be worked out, and we had a lot of fun. You're just like one big happy family there with all these age groups there, and the older children were so good at helping the little kids that couldn't do it. They were always there to give a helping hand, and it was especially the boys that did that. That was nice to see, where they would help the first and second graders do things that they couldn't do alone. So this Christmas program was thought out carefully. Remember, 4 years, nobody had money for anything. So we had to do everything in the cheapest way possible. And so we improvised. And the children would gather nuts and cones, and we silvered them and put a screw in them so we could hang them on the Christmas tree. And that the father had donated the Christmas tree each year. And we had fun doing that. The smaller children would string popcorn and or make paper chains. And the older children wrote their own Christmas play, including every person in the school. Every person had a part in it some way. And we performed it with a gusto of a Broadway show. That party was a success because each one had contributed. And that created good family spirit for the school, mm-hmm. too. Thinking of the 4 years again, 1940 to 44, we found that the surroundings and many things were changing, and especially the surroundings concerning the district that this little school was in. They couldn't afford to keep the school open anymore. It had to be closed. And they tried it 1 year after I left, and then it closed forever. And that was hard. It was hard for them to do. The parents, in general, didn't want it to happen, but they had no choice.
Was it part of the Northville School District?
I think at that time, it was separate because we had a supervisor that came out from the county. It was what they call it, more like a county school. But we didn't use the word township as much as we do now. It's a county school. And the supervisor would come out. Mm-hmm. She was the only boss I knew as far as all the 4 years I was out there. Helped as much as she could. But they had to close it, finally. And it had had its day, and they had no money for a teacher anymore, even at $5 a day. But it had to be closed. And so they put it up for sale. Now, during the war years, you could not buy lumber that was any good. If you did, it was green lumber. And it was very touch and go if you used green lumber. But a couple in Northville bought this little schoolhouse and had it moved and attached to their home. And this home can be seen today on the on Main Street near Rogers.
Oh.
They attached it to this older, lovely, old landmark home and put a new entrance to the house, and it just looked like it had been there forever. They did a beautiful job on it. And I was pleased when the owner invited me in to see what they had done after they had attached it. And the windows were just the same, and in one corner they had left the old supply cupboard just as before. But the old pot-bellied stove and the blackboards and the desks and the long bench were just a memory now. But I am very glad that we have a one-room school in our historical center, because I feel that they are truly a part of our history.
How did you get to school?
I rode the bus. In those days, Mayberry Sanitarium was a very popular place, and they ran a bus from here to Five Points, which was Grand River. And this bus was driven by the father of a couple of my children that I had in the school. And he had to go right by my door here on 7 Mile Road, on West 7 Mile Road, where the school was on the other side. And I would see him coming, but he said, "Now you stay inside your door in these cold mornings, and I will just drive the bus slowly, and that'll give you time to get out to the road." And I don't think the people ever caught on that we had that little thing going.
You didn't have to pay.
He was very very good about it. And the same time at night, I would the bus would come along shortly after the last child left. And,
But you were in this home at that time, were you?
Yes, here? I lived right here at that time. Yes, I lived in this house for, it's getting close to 54 or 55 years now. Let's see, you came in here in 35. But we rented it. We didn't own it at that time. We just had any money to own everything. And we rented it for $25 a month. And it was quite a new home. It had built, see, we came in the 30s, and the home had been built in the early 20s. So it was probably about a 10-year-old home when we came into it. Or 10 or 15, between 10 and 15, maybe. And it was in the estate of a lawyer. The people who bought it never lived in it. The man died, and the wife became unable to take care of things anymore. She was very senile, they said. And the lawyer handled the whole thing. 8 years after we rented it, we came home from school one night and found a for sale sign on our front lawn.
Oh my.
And we panicked for a while, and it had a number there to call this lawyer. Well, it was in the hands of the estate because the woman wasn't able to take care of business anymore. And the lawyer had no personal interest. He just wanted to sell the Starkville property and get rid of it. And so we pleaded with him over the phone, if possible, could he give us first chance at buying it? We didn't have a cent of money to do it with, but if possible. And that's how we happened to. We did find some folks that loaned us a little money, and we put a down payment on it. And I worked another year in this school, in the Hinman School, and I put all my money of that year on it, and so we were able to gradually win it. But I don't know what this property would bring today, but we paid less than $5,000 for it. And that was a very fair price at that time.
Right.
Very fair price. But it was turned out to be the best investment we ever made in our lives. So
right.
We were very fortunate to have had that.
Well, now, was the fish hatchery in
Yes. That was another thing. The buses and the people who had patients out of this Mayberry sand would pass our door, and they had to pass the fish hatchery then, too, on the edge, which is just about a block up the street here. And that was a very famous spot to stop. And many times on Sunday afternoons, we could not get out of our own driveway because they parked too close to our driveway or something. It was just way down here, and they'd walk up there because it was, and I think it was mostly the sanitarian people that were interested in it because they passed it every Sunday. Well, let's stop. This is the Sunday we're going to stop and see it. And they were curious. And it was beautiful then. It was well kept up, and it was worth seeing. Because it was government owned, government taking care of it. And it was a very beautiful spot.
Now, you mentioned way back about going to choir practice in the Methodist Church. I think that would be interesting to talk about. Now, your husband was in music. That was a natural then.
So we just sang in the choir at first, and then I don't know just how long we just did that. But finally, he became choir director. I don't remember the other man who had it, a Mr. Roy Clark was his name. And he'd been there and had that for years, so he was one of those good old standby people in any church. He probably became too old to do it anymore. I don't remember that part of it too well. But anyway, my husband directed the church choir. We had one very... He directed it for 13 years. And during that 13 years, he We have one very unusual thing happen in one church service. My husband came from the South, and he was he had no bias at all as far as color was concerned. And in our school at that time, we had some Salem children were in our district at that time. The district has been changed since. But they came to our school. And one family had two girls, two sisters, who were very good singers. So they naturally were in the choir, the high school choir. And wonderful girls, a wonderful family. And because of my husband's unbiased attitude toward everything, he just, without thinking or asking anybody about it, he asked this Ernestine Lewis, was the girl's name, a beautiful soprano voice, to sing in our church choir one Sunday morning, to sing a solo. And we had people, Northville people, who didn't walk out, they stomped out of the service that morning because a black girl was singing the solo. Now that was way back in the 30s or early 40s. That wouldn't happen in Northville today, but it did then. It did then. And that's a lasting memory of the lack of education we had on that at that time compared to what we have today. And our attitudes certainly have changed for the better in many relationships that way. Then later, we left this choir because he, now that's another story. During the Depression years, you had no gas to travel anywhere. You had no money to do anything with, so you had to be very careful with what little you had. But you had to have entertainment, nevertheless, or you'd get stir crazy in your own homes. You just had to do something. Well, my husband decided that it was time to organize at least the men in town and get a chorus started. And he was quite successful, and it got known. They sang around different places. They pooled their gas money together and pooled rides in their cars to get to the places where they sang, because gasoline was so scarce. But it was a release. There was so much tension at that time. Singing, if you liked to sing, and you got it with a bunch of men, you just liked it. Well, it grew. It just grew miraculously fast. And it included Plymouth, finally, and Wayne, and Redford, Novi, Northville, Salem. Just all over, people came that could get there at all. They would come to sing, and they practiced just one night a week. But they got pretty good at it and loved doing it. And so they went around to different, they traveled quite a distance, finally, before that disbanded. Then, out of that, grew a community chorus, including women, also. The men still kept theirs separate, but they also joined the other. So we had a good basis for the men singers, and then we joined in a larger chorus, and that chorus started to learn Handel's Messiah. And the first few years, we didn't do the whole thing. We had to learn just a few each year. We weren't trained well enough to sing that massive work. But that Messiah grew the same way because of a need at the time of people to get together and to do something that would make them forget all their hardships in life. And so that increased. They gave the Messiah in this town, in the Presbyterian Church, for two reasons. It was community-wide anyway, but they had the better organ at the time, and they could seat us in the front of the church better than any other church in town then. And so that's why that's the old Presbyterian church that where you went in the front door instead of the side door. And that's before they remodeled, so it's the old set there. And that chorus grew. We always had between 75 and 100 in it when they sang, and later as it grew, not right at first. We noticed, we tried to use, at first, just local talent to sing the solo parts. And we had to, because we didn't have any money to hire any. And we did for a couple years, until times got a little better. And we were very lucky. I remember one singer who was a member of the Presbyterian Church and a very well-known townsman at the time, was Carl Bryan, and he sang the solo parts a couple years. Another girl who, even after she was in college, came back and sang with us because she had a beautiful soprano voice and wanted to do it for her tone. And that was Evelyn Ambler. That would be Cheryl Ambler's daughter. And Cheryl was known by everyone when we lived here. I don't remember the other two soloists right. But we did use local talent for a few years just because we didn't have money to hire any. But as times improved, we did get our soloists from the University of Michigan. And we were able to pay them what they needed to be paid in time. And they were very helpful. But it grew. Now, out of that, it became a sort of almost like an alumni association. We gave it the last Sunday before Christmas every year. And the students, because they've been in the high school choir, they just naturally kept singing with the community chorus. The students would keep coming back from college or from wherever at Christmas time to sing in the Messiah. And afterwards, they would have refreshments for us. The churches would combine and serve the refreshments. And these students would get at tables by themselves. It was a regular alumni evening for them, a good old time, you know. And some of those students wrote letters back to my husband later when he was so ill, and would say that of all the things that they got out of their high school years and after that meant the most to them was singing in that Messiah. So that was it was a worthwhile project that started during the war period and the Depression period and grew into something that hung on. I think it was 30 or 31 years they gave the Messiah. And then his health broke and couldn't do it anymore. Nobody picked it up.
Now you also, didn't you teach later on in North Carolina?
Yes. I took time off to have my family. I had three children, and I didn't go back. I subbed all those years, but I didn't have a contract until my youngest was in the fourth grade. And then they pleaded with me. They needed only half a teacher. The principal called me in one day, says, we need an English teacher half time. And would I be interested? And I thought, well, maybe that would work out. And at least I'd be in the same place every day and have a regular schedule, and the pay was a little better than Sunday was. And so I said yes. And that was in June. And in September, he called me and said, the half job has turned into a full-time job. That's when I went back to teach full-time. And my little one was in the fourth grade then, and I think I stayed about 13 more years of teaching.
It was mainly English?
Mainly English. Mm-hmm. English and advanced reading and things of that type, whatever was needed. It was mostly, well, then I had another decision to make. I taught in the junior high level until the new high school was built. And then I had to make a decision. Do I stay back? Because the junior high stayed back in the old school, and the rest of it went up. So I had a decision to make then. I could do it either way. So I finally chose to go up to the high school and finish my years up there. And I think I was up there 8 years before I retired. And that was a sudden retirement because my husband and I, we were the only husband. I guess we were the first husband and wife team that ever taught in this school under contract. Although that high school even then was spread out so that he was at the far end where the music was, I was at the other end, and we saw each other hardly ever except in the meeting after school for the teachers. Trying to say something, I can't remember. Well, let's see, what else can we...
I remember your husband had honey for sale.
Oh yeah, that was a good summer project. We always had a big garden, much as our land would allow us to have. And we planted a lot of fruit trees, so we always had a lot of work of that type, which was summer work, which was good for teachers that were off at that time. And he started pollinating our fruit trees with a couple hives of bees. And those two hives of bees accumulated to 135 hives before we were finished. Then it became a business, and it was a fine business because the older children could help in the summertime, and we had to haul it in, and process it, and bottle it, and sell it.
Did it right here in the basement?
Right here in the basement, mm-hmm. And it really helped us out of our financial difficulties at that time. That was beginning to get us up on our feet again. We couldn't do it on just the teacher's salaries alone because we were too far behind, always college debts to begin with and then the Depression and the war years.
Where had you gone to school?
I went to, we both went to Albion College, and then he got his master's degree over at the University of Michigan. And I was enrolled to do the same, but I never quite made it because I had another baby that year, and so I couldn't go to let that go.
I can stop it if you want. Going again, you were talking about Mr. Knapp.
Getting back to the school situation here. Mr. Knapp he'd been a superintendent for so many, many years, and was just full of new ideas, and he wanted to come back to the hometown and really make a showing immediately. He was so wonderful. But he also knew he had to go carefully. Because of the times and because of the situation of the superintendent before him, he had to move more carefully in many areas. He definitely wanted to put in more language study, and he interviewed me for German, which I was prepared to teach. And I'll never forget, he was a very, very sort of austere looking man until you got to know him, and that he could frighten you the first time you saw him, maybe, but just his stern look. But as I said earlier, he interviewed me in his Highland Park home. When he interviewed me in German, I didn't know he knew German. And he asked all the questions, and I was supposed to answer them in German, which I did. And I thought, it was just questions about my life and what my goals were and things like that. But when we finished, he repeated one sentence I made. He says, well, you should have used the subjunctive mood here. And I thought, my goodness, he's a perfectionist here. And but after you got to know him, he was just a dear man, and his wife even more so, the dearest lady that this town ever had lived here.
Well, how many years did he stay on then?
He was only here less than 2 years when he died. And he died very suddenly. He had been to a high school play the night before and died in the night. It was very sudden, leaving her alone. They had no children. They lived over on Dunlap, right next to where the Ellisons lived now. Just one house down from Rogers on Dunlap. And, but I never did get to teach German. He couldn't, he didn't dare put it in that first year he was here. He wanted to, but he didn't dare. They had French here, and they were still teaching Latin then. And, but he wanted, I found out he'd had 9 years of German in college level, high college level. So he knew his German a lot better than I knew mine. But he always had that in mind, that he wanted to put German in, but he didn't live long enough to ever do it. So I never got to teach German. I almost did one other time. They called me in, and that was Mr. Ellison, his principal then. He called me in, and he said, how would you like to teach German next year? Which was a shock. This came out of the blue. But here he had all my credentials on the desk that morning, and he says, I noticed you are eligible to teach German, and we've never had German here. How would you like to put it in? I said, I'd love to, but I don't know if this is the time. Because Spanish was coming in at the same time, you see. And things like that. Times were changing. German was going out, Spanish was coming in. Latin was going out. It was changeable. So I never did really get to... I did sub in German, and they did have it later on, for a few years, but it didn't last long. I don't think they have it now. I'm not sure. I don't know. I haven't checked. But at least I never got to teach German. So therefore I forgot most of what I've known about it too. But Mr. Knapp was very good at organizing.